The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Thomas Perry. He joins us on the telephone in the Los Angeles area. He's got a new novel out. It's called Pro Bono. Welcome back.
Thanks, Vic. I'm very glad to be back.
When I saw the title, I thought, this has got to involve a lawyer. And sure enough, it does. Your protagonist is a guy named Charles Warren. I'm wondering, how did you come up with this particular storyline? Because this is a very complex one.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think as I was kind of looking it over, you know, I hadn't thought about it for a while because, once a book is finished, I kind of erase the notes that are in my mind. So I was sort of looking at it, and I was thinking, you know, what seems to have happened in this case, and sometimes other times happens too, is that I got kind of curious about something I don't know a lot about. And so I realized that it's a subject that I kind of wouldn't mind spending a few months learning about and thinking about. And as I do that, this is probably a problem with my mind, various kind of criminal things occur to me to how it could be made into a crime novel. But it was fun. It was an interesting thing to think about for a while, essentially financial crimes, which is something I really didn't know a whole lot about, it was sort of a pleasant idea for me to think about. And of course, as you go along, I mean, one of the advantages of being a writer who doesn't necessarily have everything outlined or figured out at the beginning is that as you go along through the year, other interesting ideas and sidelines and things start to make the whole structure kind of more complicated. And, that's interesting too. So, been kind of a fun project.
Well, I've got to give it to you that the way it opens, it's the most bizarre, convoluted opening, and I'm not going to say anything about it other than after reading it, I said, oh, man, I just got to keep going. This is brilliant.
Oh, great. Great. I wanted it to be one of those things that kind of sucks you in at the beginning. Because, one of the dangers of this kind of book is that, there is an exposition problem. You have to convey a lot of information in addition to everything else. And I wanted to start out, kind of reassuring the reader that, this actually was a book that was going to be fun to read. So,
well, you do that. This young lawyer, when you bring the young lawyer in and you introduce us to him, this guy, he's a bachelor, kind of a workaholic type, and he does a lot of civil work, divorces, and he's also an accountant. And so he has an expertise. You alluded to these financial matters. But for him, it's kind of personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at the risk of doing a spoiler, I mean, the reason that he's understands these matters and has been interested in them and has kind of pursued that kind of a career is that his mother was a victim of a con man who married rich women and essentially robbed them of everything they had and took off. And so he has not only an understanding of kind of how that's done, but also he has an understanding of the damage and the personality and sort of genuine nastiness of the people who do this stuff. You know, one of the things that that you realize when you first start looking into this stuff is that whenever possible, a con man will take every penny, even if it means that the victim, you know, has, I don't say the victim has $10 million. He will not only take every dollar of those $10 million, but, you know, if there's any possibility, he'll, you know, create debt for the person, you know. You know, if he could take their blood, he'd take that too. You know, it's, it's everything that's takeable will be stolen by that person. And, you know, these are really, you know, it's a box that once you open it, you start to see, you know, how really evil it is, you know.
Well, you kind of write him out of the story right away, but he's the whole reason the story exists. And as you said, he's a nasty character. He's trying to take every penny, and what he can't get, he'll destroy. I mean, it's crazy. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that he comes from a family of people like him.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, you know, kind of as we go along, you know, what I wanted to do was to kind of show a lot of different aspects of this stuff. And also kind of look into the kinds of people who get into this and how in some cases they're really not such terribly bad people to begin with. There are people who are weak or can be tempted or something like that. And then they get in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, suddenly they find themselves no different from any other criminal. And then, you know, you have a kind of stage beyond that, which tells us more about the initial person who robbed Charlie's mother.
Yeah.
To learn a little more about it and learn how, you know, essentially how low it can go, you know.
Thomas Perry joins us. His book is Pro Bono. And we have a lot of criminals in this story, but there are two different kinds of criminals. We have criminals who apparently have no ethics, like this con artist. And we have some other criminals who seem to have ethics. They seem to want to do good. Sometimes it takes a little persuasion, but I'm tiptoeing around this because this is an amazing cast of villains and sort of semi-villains. And some of the semi-villains are very useful in the story, but I love this pair of guys that you have that are pretending they're police. These guys are great characters.
Well, I'm glad you liked them. Yeah, they were kind of a find. I mean, once I started thinking about them and what, you know, what their lives could be like or might have been like, and, you know, sort of who they become when they start, you know, and then their various pretenses, that was kind of a fun side trip for me, because the idea was that, you know, if you are truly a career criminal and have, you know, been in a lot of prisons and been arrested many, many times and so on, you become very good at the sort of the jargon that police use.
And right.
You know, that sort of thing. So that you're very good at pretending to be a cop because you've seen so many of them in your life, you know.
So, yeah. Well,
and fun for me.
They inject a lot of humor into the story. And I think one of my favorite parts of the story is at one point where one of them starts talking about that handsome guy driving the bus. I just laughed and laughed. That is so funny. It's such a fraught situation. And suddenly everyone just kind of goes, oh.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really kind of fun sometimes to, you know, do that kind of thing. And, you know, if you you happen to think of the right character to do it, it's like a bonus. It's kind of a happy day of writing.
Wow, I believe it. Well, after I read your book, a murder book, a couple years ago, which is the first book of yours that I read, I was so impressed that I went back and I tracked down a couple dozen of your other books and read them and just loved almost every one of them. And I just, I love the way you write. And I think this is one of the funnest books that you've written. And this protagonist of yours, this lawyer, Charles, he's one of the most likable characters I've encountered in a novel in a long time. He's just, we love this guy.
Well, good. Good. I mean, that's, you know, it was, I wrote him that way because that was the way I felt about him. You know, I felt like, you know, this is a guy who, for instance, you know, he's a very sophisticated lawyer. He knows a lot about basically everything in the situation. And yet he's willing to actually violate the law himself if he really thinks somebody's life is in danger or, you know, that a client of his is in trouble. He really is, you know, willing to put himself out there. He's, you know, kind of a decent guy who is in a situation where he knows that he can do things that will help other people and, you know, is willing to take the chance to do it. Just sort of an average person who has a lot, you know, inside him that other people don't know about. I mean, that's really part of the fun of the book too, which is, was the fact that there are a lot of people that kind of miscalculate because they don't really know who they're dealing with. You know, This is a guy who, you know, appears to be sort of a paper pusher and so on. But he is not somebody who's going to back down if he knows that what he's doing is necessary and right.
He's like a private eye, even though he's not.
Right. And, he really doesn't want to be.
Right.
He wants to.
Right.
So yeah. That's the part of it. You know, it's like, you know, anybody who sort of wants to have a certain kind of power probably is not the right person to be given the power.
Right. The book is pro bono. Thomas Perry joins us. You used the word client a moment ago. I suppose we better talk about the client because When she walks in the door, we all just kind of go, wow.
Well, good. Good. I mean, I put in a kind of introduction to who she was, you know, before. So when she appears in his office, you know, this is kind of the first day that we've seen him as a grown-up. And it's also the first day that we've seen her since she became a widow, you know, which is... you know, at that moment, the reader is supposed to say, oh, I get it. You know, that's what these really disparate parts of this book were leading up to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's the moment. And, you know, she's an interesting character to me, too. I mean, she kind of dawned on me at a certain point is that both he and she are... they kind of miscalculate each other at first. Almost immediately after that, they begin to kind of sense, you know, the magnetism and so on. But, it really isn't going to go in the way that we're all used to seeing on television or something, you know.
There's definitely a slight crackle between them. There's a little electricity there. It's subtle, but as things build, it gets a little heavier, a little brighter. It's like, well, we need to cut off the power here and do the story because we don't want these two falling in love.
Right. Right. Well, also, I mean, they are, you know, in a situation, you know, that's really kind of life and death. it's very difficult to be thinking about building a relationship when you are essentially fighting for your life.
Right.
It's one of those things that's kind of involuntary in a way.
Yeah. So. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO at 91.3 on your dial. Southwest Ohio's music home for joy, contemplation, and community. My guest is Thomas Perry. We're talking about his new novel, Pro Bono. Not actually out yet as we are recording this. And we are also recording this during a week that the area where the story is set has been burning more intensely than ever before. And you live out there in Los Angeles. It must be a weird feeling to know that your book's going to come out and it's going to be describing a Los Angeles that has changed dramatically just in the last week. What's it been like being out there this week with these horrible fires?
Well, it's been kind of tense. I mean, one of the things about it is that, it's a situation where we've all lived very comfortably in Los Angeles, which has always been a really pleasant place to live. I mean, the house that we live in was built in 1935. And, you know, while it's been remodeled and so on in several ways by us and others, it's just sort of a very comfortable and safe sort of place to live. And it's the best climate from my point of view in the country. I mean, it's really pleasant. But all of a sudden, we're in a situation now where on Monday night, we began to have winds, which we call Santa Ana winds, which are go on every single year. But instead of, you know, 25 to 30 miles an hour winds with higher gusts, all of a sudden there were sections of Los Angeles that were getting winds of 85 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour. And, 75 miles an hour is essentially a hurricane. And when a fire begins, all of a sudden these densely populated areas that haven't burned in, 50 years or something are having sparks that will blow for a mile sometimes to, set somebody else's house on fire. Mm. And so it's kind of like a chain reaction, in slow motion. But it's so far there have been over 10,000 buildings, and most of them houses, which have burned to the ground. And there's no real sign that it's over yet. The firefighters have gotten a handle on it and have begun to get containment, but the containment figures are like 6% or something, or 35% in a couple of cases. It's very dangerous. And of course, when you have a county with 10 million people in it and you start telling people to evacuate their homes, you get traffic jams. And some of that has been a real big problem. My wife and I, while we live very far from the place where it started, were told to prepare to evacuate two or three different times. And we packed up all our stuff and that we felt that we really needed to have, including our dog. And then eventually, many hours later, the closest fires were put out or controlled, and so they called that off. And then a couple of other times we've been told to prepare to leave, but we haven't. ended up needing to. But it's tense over a period of time. And, of course, you're a little bit afraid to go to bed because you're afraid, you will miss the call that tells you to leave. And it's worrisome. But, of course, in my particular case, in our family's case, there are people all around in this city that we have known who, you know, have lost everything.
Ooh.
And we, you know, what we had is basically a fire drill, you know.
We've
been very lucky and you know, so far.
I heard there was actually a false alarm that everyone in Los Angeles County had to evacuate.
Yeah, I got that one too. But, you know, my wife immediately, you know, saw the thing when it went off on her cell phone. She looked and the fire that had sort of prompted that is, well, I don't know, 15 miles away or so from here. So, I mean, it was just, you know, we didn't jump to repack our bags.
Yeah.
We knew that something was wrong.
Well,
as
I mentioned to you in an email on Wednesday, I had an interview scheduled with another crime writer out there in L.A. who's very much associated with L.A. And an hour before the interview was supposed to be recorded, he had to evacuate his house. And later that day, I heard about another writer who I've just interviewed out there who had to evacuate his house. So you are definitely one of the lucky ones.
For sure, yeah. Well, I mean, my agent had to evacuate I think it was, you know, Tuesday night, something like that. And he next turned up in my sights because he sent a picture of himself volunteering to help people at the Pasadena disaster shelter that they've set up at the convention center.
Oh, my.
You know, it's just, you know, people are jumping to try and help each other and take care of each other and so on. But at the same time, you know, it's an awful lot of people, an awful lot of houses. And, you know, it adds up to a lot of tragedies.
Well, Thomas, when you were packing up, when you were trying to put stuff together to leave, what was the one sentimental item that you and Joe were going to grab to take with you?
I'll tell you, we were both very actively running around and throwing things into the suitcase, and I realized afterwards that some of the things that I had put in were things like my PhD diploma, my honorable discharge papers, and I thought to myself afterwards that those would have been like the most useless things in the world because nobody has looked at them for about 50 years. There's no one has ever asked to see them. Nobody has ever, you know, so it was ridiculous. It was much more, I think the big thing that I had brought that I'm most proud of was an entire box of poop bags for the dog, which would have been far more useful than a diploma. So,
oh boy,
so I'm going to have to rethink it on the next round, I guess.
My guest is Thomas Perry. We were talking about pro bono. Now we're talking about Los Angeles. In this book, one of the techniques that I really enjoyed with this is we have these villains who move through the story. And when the villains are dispatched and that particular obstacle presented by them is overcome, they're just gone. It's like they never existed. We move on through the story. There's none of this like retrospective, oh, gee, I'm sure glad I did such and such to so-and-so. They're just gone. I love that.
Good. One thing that I'm proud of and, you know, in my career is that I managed to, try to take a lot of the sort of pretentious nonsense out of the whole process so that it's, you know, what I picture is sort of, I'm talking to a friend, I'm talking to a reader.
Mm.
And, what I do is, I say to myself, okay, this is my new book. This is something that I thought of. It's a story, and the only thing I can guarantee about it is that you haven't read it before.
Mm-hmm.
and I hope you like it. And, you know, that's somehow makes the process so much easier, because it's like telling a friend a story. When I get bored with a scene, it means the scene was over two pages before that. Uh-huh. And I just haven't cut it back yet.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just, there are an awful lot of people who will tell you that there's this particular method that you have to use, and you have to follow these rules and so on. And, you know, sometimes readers will tell you that. But really, all you're doing is trying to tell somebody something that kind of amuses you, and you hope that it will help, that it will amuse them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all, you know. And the rest seems to me to be unnecessary rules.
You are married to a novelist. Is she your first reader?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe and I have been married for, I guess, 45 years. And we met at a university where we were both working. And she has a PhD in English also. And she was, she and I were writing partners in television for 11 years. And we've actually, the room that I'm sitting in contains two large desks.
Uh-huh.
And hers is about, I don't know, 15 feet away from mine. And we often spend days, you know, writing completely different things at the same time. And, you know, it's been kind of a happy way to proceed. And when I'm done with what I consider to be an acceptable first draft, I, you know, ask her to read it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, I don't tell her what it's about ahead of time. So, you know, because you only get one first reading.
Uh-huh.
You know, the second time your reader reads it, they know, you know, they've already read the jokes, they've already had the surprises, et cetera. So it becomes, you know, a kind of miserable form of work.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, and we tell each other the truth, that's all.
I'm impressed.
Even though it's sometimes difficult.
Yeah, I'm impressed by your productivity, the way you've been cranking out a book a year here in the last few years, and I just think it's tremendous. And I'll be looking forward to the next one. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a great pleasure for me. So, you know, thanks for inviting me.
You bet. My guest has been Thomas Perry, and the new one is Pro Bono, and I rarely do this, but I'm going to do it for this book. I give it my unconditional guarantee. If you don't like it, send me a mean email, and I'll actually respond to you. But I think you're going to like it. Thanks again, Tom.
Well, thank you, Eric.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.